David and I were talking yesterday about what we were going to chat about today. I said I actually could not cope with speaking about COVID and children and anxiety and schools. Honestly, I don't care. Right. Today, I don't care. For a couple of hours, the kids can have all the anxiety they want. The parents can have all the anxiety that they want. I can't, David. It might make me a bad person, no. But I'm done for today, this morning.
You're all COVID out, and I think a lot of people are feeling that way, Howard. It's just like, it just dominates our thinking, our chats to our friends, to our family, what we read on the news. It's just completely overwhelming. So I like where we went yesterday and hopefully going today, even though it's not a happy topic and brighter topic, but at least it's a different topic.
Exactly. And what we want to talk about is the psychology behind protesting and the psychology behind rioting. And perhaps these, we need to distinguish the difference between the two, because I spoke to a friend of mine in New York late last night, and he lives in a fairly religious area, where they've had some of these types of incidents before. They've had anti-Semitic attacks. So people are very nervous. But the point that he made was the majority of the protests were very peaceful. But obviously the news focuses on the looters and those that are running through the streets and taking advantage, you know, protesting the death of somebody while they steal a Louis Vuitton handbag. So I think we have to be careful about distinguishing between real, active, genuine protest and rioting or looting, which is purely just criminal.
Absolutely. And I think there might be a third category, Howard, of people who start off as and very small amounts, you know, we need to say, who start off as peaceful protesters, but then become, you know, and again, this is where the realm of social psychology comes in, to try and understand from a psychological point of view what that third group,
The ones that get the upgrade.
The ones who move from peaceful protests and why they would move then into looting or to become more aggressive towards the police, and become more violent. And I think you're absolutely right. There are thousands of people, not only in America, but around the world, who are protesting since the death of George Floyd, and protesting peacefully and have peaceful intentions. But as you say, there's this, there are the rioters, and I think this third group that gets kind of sucked in, if you would, into the violence and into the looting. So I think it's important to distinguish between the three.
Right. Okay. So let's start off with the anger that this ignited, we see this very, very visual scene of a man callously choking another man to death while it's being filmed. The guy's begging for his life. That obviously makes us all feel some kind of a horror, rage, outrage, and the need to do something.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, I think for me it's a normal response, and it's happening more and more, where we see that these kind of abuses, if you want to call them murders, are happening on, are being recorded. So people are seeing the brutality and are actually seeing the actual event unfolding, which is very traumatic for people to watch. They're literally watching someone being killed. The fact that it's being done by someone in uniform, is frightening and causes complete outrage, because of course, goes without saying that people in uniform are supposed to be protecting us. Supposed to be discriminating between races, and it's completely outrageous that we've seen the outpouring of rage throughout the world. It's been absolutely incredible to see. But I think what's important when we look from a psychological perspective, years have gone by in social psychology where we've spoken about de-individualization.
Right.
It's early in the morning. So really what that means is that, you know, people, when they do get together, they tend to lose their personal identity when they're in a crowd. And interestingly enough, which I thought was quite apt for the time that we're in, is that often people who are in a crowd and they get How
do we spell that?
It's D-I-N.
D-I-N. Right.
Is it V-I-D-U-A-T-O-T-I-O-N.
Individualized.
Yes, so they lose their sense of identity.
Right, of identity, of individual, right.
Yes, and what's, you know, when they move into that crowd. And this is kind of, you know, how psychology has over many years explained it. But often what's so interesting is to see that people in a crowd who do become, you know, part of that crowd often wear masks and are often hiding their identity.
Oh, that's and so interesting.
And I thought, how it's so interesting how during this time so many people when they go out have lost or are losing their identity, and I just, you know, again putting it out there,
what
wondering whether whether that also exacerbated that sense of
Social media, when we're hiding behind our computer, many people, the majority of the people that attack me on social media are not using their own names. They're using whatever name they've given themselves, a pseudonym. The more removed you are from your own identity, I guess the easier it is to behave in a poor manner.
And absolutely. And I think for me in these times, really when we go out, you know, we are losing part of our identity. We all are wearing masks. We have to look twice to see who that person is to try and identify them. And certainly in a crowd, you know, that's going to be more difficult.
Right.
But I think there are other theories that, you know, talk to this. That, and one theory which I find fascinating, which actually was brought forward by a guy called Mark Granovetter, and actually Malcolm Gladwell actually supports it and highlights it a lot, and that's the idea of thresholds in aggressive behavior, that everyone has a threshold. So basically what that means is that when you see the number, it's actually about the number of people who are engaged in aggressive activity, everyone has a threshold. So Howard's threshold might be, okay, I see three people engaging in aggressive unruly activity, and that gives me now somehow permission to engage. And some people have very low thresholds, and some people have extremely high thresholds and might not even engage in aggressive behavior or looting behavior because their thresholds are so high. And I find that very interesting, because I think you know, the new theories in social psychology are actually saying that we don't lose our identity in crowds, but we become, we just take on a collective identity, but we don't lose that distinct individual sense of self.
If you have a high threshold, you'll walk out with a cheesecake, but you're not going to steal a TV. David, what about to me, a lot of this is also about dangerous language. And I don't know if dangerous language, if language is dangerous, or if it's just if it's cognitive dissonance or an excuse. And where I'm going with this is as follows. If you're running through the streets of New York and let's say you're protesting, but the protest turns into a riot, or in fact you're part of a very poorly behaved mob that actually doesn't really care about individual rights, but they're there for all sorts of other things, and you're outside the Louis Vuitton store, it's much easier to rationalize your behavior if you're saying, well, this store represents the hierarchy of a capitalist system that in essence has crushed individual rights for decades, you know, and therefore it's kind of okay to walk in and take a handbag. The language that we're using actually removes us, and I think it happens quite a lot on the left, and it's happening a lot in academic circles, because then we've actually got the excuse for anything, because we could rationalize through our own behavior.
Absolutely, absolutely. We can, you know, we talk a lot in psychology about projecting into people, but we also, there's no doubt, project into symbols. And that's a good one, like Louis Vuitton. You know, what does it represent to different people?
But does it really? Because if you're looting it to steal a handbag, well, that says a lot less about your assertion that it actually represents a unjust capitalist system that has exploited workers. Because you're actually doing it for the handbag, you know, let's be honest.
Absolutely, and that's why we're talking about like terms like, and I've been speaking about a lot, I know, cognitive bias, where you, and as you said, we kind of justify to ourselves and we look for information that will justify our behavior. And, that's exactly what's happening.
Sorry, David.
I was going to say, but to your point, I mean, you know, when you think about how Donald Trump has handled the situation, maybe it's ridiculous to say, I don't know who's advising him, but if he had to just go into basic psychology, and even use the speeches of, legends like, Martin Luther King, he would see two things. One thing is that Martin Luther King also condoned riots. He was completely against them. Protest is one thing.
Yes, no, he didn't condone riots. He condemned riots.
Sorry, he condemned riots, yes. But protest was a different thing.
Of course.
And that was the first thing. You know, there was no mention of that. And then the second thing is that he made it about, us versus them. We are going to bring in the military. Mm. We are going to be hard. And it's been shown. Absolutely. And it's been shown time and time again, from the past that if you create and you say language like that and you bring the army or you bring police force in riot gear, it definitely creates, and that's the language, Howard, the language of us versus
absolutely.
Them.
Absolutely.
It just fuels the fire. And, you know, when we talk about this idea of de-individualization, and as we're saying, it's a move more to a collective identity. I mean, the analogy we can use is if, like, we're all on a bus, there are different types of people on a bus, young, old, black, white, Muslim, Christian, whatever it might be, and the bus is attacked. You know, we suddenly now have a collective identity. Doesn't matter where we come from. Mm. Doesn't matter.
Mm. We saw that with COVID.
Yeah. Absolutely. We all are fighting a common enemy. And Donald Trump did a very good job of making himself the common enemy.
Yeah. It's appalling. David, we're going to take some ads. When we come back, what I want to try and understand from you is this, is the outpouring of grief, horror, condemnation around this death is, in my view, absolutely appropriate. But what is it that, and protest is absolutely appropriate. What happens where protesters either become looters or when people just decide they're going to use that opportunity to loot, and to cause havoc? What is it that is there a link between the two? And that's what I want to try and figure out with you. Zanati 826. Kate says you have to watch Mamma Mia. Everybody should watch it. Clive says the protests are being hijacked by violent thugs like Antifa. Paul says that the real issue is poverty amongst African American community. And just going to go a few more messages. And Bev says, I've just switched on. What do the looters do with the bags? Do they burn them or sell them or wear them? Perpetuate and covet capitalist values, an inescapable paradox of desire and despise. An interesting one indeed. David, your thoughts?
Absolutely. I mean, I think, your question is a good one because, and that comment about what is the cause of the rioting? Why is there, we can see it's clearly anger. It's an opportunity to show and to vent one's anger. And I think it's just so important to understand what the underlying cause of this. What is the disease? You know, what is happening?
Yes. Why the tremendous anger? And you know, it's an interesting thing, and I know it's going to be so controversial what I'm going to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. We've seen a tremendous. Yeah. Let's just take New York City. There's been a tremendous amount of anti-Semitic attacks taking place in the last year in New York. Horrific. The mayor has been appalling in his treatment of it. He hasn't taken it seriously. A Jew dies, on Hanukkah in an attack. and you don't see, forget the reaction of the world, because that's not, it's not about that. It's not where I'm going, and I'm not going to let it go there. So if anyone wants to send a message, please know I'm going to ignore it. Because that's not the conversation. But what we're not seeing is a outpouring from the Jewish community, let's say, of anger, protest, riots, etc. And I think that what that says is that inherently within the Jewish community in New York, maybe there isn't that underlying anger, impotence, frustration. So they might be frustrated with this anti-Semitic stuff that is happening, but it doesn't go so deep that it's almost like a pressure valve has been released and everybody goes crazy. To Paul's point, there's obviously so much more underlying this, a system of systematic racism, and it's very, very clear that most Americans, I was reading some surveys yesterday, are absolutely dead against racism. Most Americans actually feel very comfortable with their police force. But it doesn't mean that this doesn't exist. It does exist, and this has ignited something that is a lot deeper than what it appears. So not your thoughts on that before I asked David?
You're right. And I mean, there's been lots of periods where people riot. I mean, someone even mentioned the Rodney King, the riots after that attack. And I feel like there's just frustration because how many times do people have to riot before someone actually listens, before laws are changed, and behavior changes? That's the frustration in this. And I think even with the looting, where someone even goes and loot, I don't think it's purely criminal behavior. Like, I don't think that it's just criminals that go and loot. There's so much frustration, and I guess also it depends on your threshold as well. You know, and there have been many Americans who were forced into criminal behavior when they were younger that are now successful and law-abiding citizens. And we should look at that how far does poverty go in terms of changing someone's behavior to become criminal?
I agree. I think for me, there's nothing worse and more frustrating than not having a voice. And I know, you know, not to simplify it, but when it comes down to what the power of psychology is, just in its very kind of macro form, it's that the person feels heard. And it's not the solutions, it's not the advice, often not the advice that therapists give. It's just being heard. And I think for me, and that's the power. And I think on a macro level, in the world, so many people are not being heard and feel completely disenfranchised and powerless. And I think when they see an act of aggression, like a knee on a neck on a man who's just asking to, you know, just asking to be able to breathe, it ignites an absolute anger and frustration, and that's what, you know, we see is people trying to find a voice. Clearly, we're talking about the protesters, you know, and as I say, you know, I think absolutely there are opportunistic criminals who go out there and then loot. But absolutely, it's about being frustrated, not having a voice, and being outraged by this injustice that, as we say, is so clearly in a film. It's been filmed, and we see it in front of us being enacted. So it's more than hearsay. It's now first person
there's nothing ambiguous about, you know, it at all. It's 8:37. Joining us is David Abramson. He is a psychologist in private practice. Melinda says that people don't like grey areas. They want straight lines, defined boxes to put people into. Good police, bad protesters, but the lines between are extremely blurred. They're obviously good and bad on both sides. Add to that all the different narratives playing out in the press, and we are left not knowing who to believe. And I think that is very, very wise and a very accurate description.
Howard, I'm not sure if you and Zanati saw, but there was a police officer, and I'm not sure where it was, who actually took off his right gear and went into the crowd and said,
wow.
And he said, I'm with you. And they said, walk with us. And he said, come, let's walk. And it was unbelievable how
It changes everything,
saying,
yeah.
It changes.
So it's so interesting because what's interesting to me about that is so powerful, and I'm so behind that sort of thing. But when I see police officers and white children taking a knee to black protesters, I think, no person should kneel before another person because it means we're not equal. It actually even means a lack of respect on both sides, I think, because we should be walking arm in arm. No one should be kneeling before anybody else. No one should be saying, you know, that forcing our children to, there was this whole scene also going viral yesterday about these young children who were renouncing their white privilege in some kind of a ceremony. It looked like some kind of a pagan thing, but it's like that worries me because it's what you're saying is it's actually about unity. It's not about subjugation, and it doesn't help to subjugate somebody over somebody else, no matter what.
Yeah, almost like disingenuous, like saying, you know, I have the privilege of giving away my stuff, of burning my stuff, and then returning to your to your house, you know, or to your supper. So it is, you know, I think for me it's about being genuine in your approach and not just owning who you are, but keeping your eye on the ball, on the message. I think that's the most important thing, not to apologize for who you are and where, you know, what you've achieved or the race that you've been born into. But more about understanding, that you are and being proud of who you are, but also having that understanding that there are so many people who are not as privileged, who are not, and to genuinely support and genuinely, in a non-violent way, encourage change. And I think that's the problem, frustration.
Yeah, it's so interesting about what you say about disingenuous. You know, I reported earlier, China came up with a big statement saying, you know, Black Lives Matter and America needs to listen to the Black Lives Matter movement. And of course, the first response that people said was, all right, you know, don't you, you know, 1.1 million Uyghur Muslims agree, but we just can't hear from them because they're in camps. So, you know, and Iran saying, yes, you know, America is a racist country, you know, coming from a place that hangs gay people and persecutes women if they choose to uncover their head. So it's this whole lack of authenticity is such a huge thing. In fact, it was also so interesting. Somebody on Twitter yesterday, Black Coffee, tweeted Black Lives Matter, and somebody said, oh, that's rich coming from you, and you had a concert in Tel Aviv in racist Israel. And I actually got involved. I generally don't get involved in that sort of thing. But I said, wow, you know, so you get to determine who has a right to comment or not based on your sanctimonious view. You know, the arrogance of that is absolutely astounding.
Yeah.
So now that, you know, determining that Black Coffee, a black South African, can't comment on racism because he had a concert in Israel and the particular tweeter doesn't like Israel. So it becomes completely mad. Yeah. Mad.
It does. Completely mad. And it's very difficult. And I think, again, you know, just to bring it down to the individual, it's much easier to project all your insecurities into other people, into other countries, into other situations than cleaning up your own house. You know, starting with you is very difficult. It's much easier. And that's, again, you know, it's interesting when we talk about psychology. One of the big things is projection. We take all our stuff that we don't like about ourselves and we put it into other people and we hate it in them or we dislike it in them.
So explain to me how that plays into this particular case.
Well, I think again, you know, when we have situations where people are angry and they have, you know, and they have an agenda. So for example, exactly as you're saying, like if a country – like maybe Iran is struggling with, you know, or China are certainly not clear in their human rights. Yeah, that they would then point the finger quite easily. It's easier to say, look what you're doing before saying, okay, we need to own our own stuff first. We need to clean out our house first. So it's easy to jump on board when you see your faults in other people.
Do you think that's
easier to criticize it?
So do you think that's why it's also become a big talking topic in South Africa? Because it's easier to point out racism and this type of behavior in another country.
Absolutely. We hear that all the time. We hear that all the time. You know, clean up your house first. Mm. You know, we hear, why are presidents, you know, going abroad trying to fix other or sending aid overseas, you know, or, you know, that's maybe a different thing, but kind of fix up your house first is often much more difficult than kind of saying, you know, we're going to help other people because they've got problems.
Mm. So Ronnie says that there's a very specific agenda being driven here. Gang violence and black on black violence doesn't get reported. Black on white violence does, black on white violence doesn't get reported. Law abiding blacks, which are the majority and who are grateful to the cops for keeping safe, will never get reported. This heinous crime, and it is a heinous crime, is all the media wants us to see because it sells and promotes a specific narrative. The problem with that, Ronnie, is the media not meant to report it. They have to report it because it is sickening in the worst way possible. And if we don't, you know, the article that I wrote yesterday or that I read out yesterday, it's in the Jewish Report today, is exactly what happens here. It's actually very simple that this was a horrific racially based crime where a person was killed in the most brutal, ugly way possible purely because of race. It's clear. I mean, it's unambiguous. And we have to sit with that. And we didn't do it. But there's something that's gone on that's allowed that to happen. And all we have to do is just sit with that feeling and think about why. All of the rest of the stuff, the looters and the agendas and what is being reported and isn't being reported, actually is just the noise. If we don't feel and just react to that, then we have lost our basic humanity.
All the stuff does get reported, but we don't really pay attention to it because it feels normal.
It's normal
because it's not a race-based thing. In the townships, you know, there's a lot of violence going on, but I mean, it will get reported, but I mean, we're not going to concentrate on it.
And we don't, but there's also a problem and because we don't feel it.
But another thing is that we understand it's purely criminal. That's the thing. And even, for example, you know, a white person, you know, gets robbed or...
Yes, yes.
It's criminal. It's purely criminal. So we don't feel the need to, you know...
Right. And a lot of people criticize me because I don't talk enough about the murder of white farmers. And the reason that I don't is because I think it's criminal and it's terrible and it's horrific.
Yeah.
But I'm not convinced it's a racially based thing. It is criminal, the same as Zanati is saying, there's criminality everywhere. So are we...
So it does get reported, but it doesn't get reported as a race-based thing. So the reason why these ones are reported is because they go so far back they involve a lot of issues as well. Issues of poverty, of inequality, and all of those things.
It's opening a pressure valve. And all of that anger and that stuff and years of systematic, and it has been systematic abuse, and it has, or systematic racism. And, you know, I don't understand how anybody can not say it. And it doesn't mean that the whole American police force is racist. Of course not.
No.
In fact, I'm sure that 90% are not. But, you know, and I made that figure up, but everyone's making up statistics at the moment.
But
so
I mean, police brutality against black people in America, not all of that, we don't pay attention to all of that. We just pay attention to the ones where people actually get killed. But there are a lot of people going through that. In America, black people going through that, but it's not, it is reported, but we don't put a spotlight on it because it doesn't go so far as someone dying.
Yeah, it's so interesting. Melinda says, and I really like this, way too much us and them, us versus them. There's a lot of people saying it's only one section that matters. It doesn't mean, but that doesn't mean it's to the detriment of others. It's just the support that is needed at a given time.
And I like that.
I like that as well.
Because I've seen a lot, there are a lot of people that have a problem with the hashtag Black Lives Matter. And it's not saying only Black Lives Matter. It's just saying that for a lot of years, Black people have felt like they don't matter. There's been a system that's been created where it feels like Black people, you know, did not matter or do not matter. Mm-hmm. Where now we need to actually say, but Black people's lives have always mattered.
So I want to just make one clarification here. I'm fully supportive of the Black Lives Matter, but I'm not supportive of the Black Lives Matter movement, because it is a problematic movement. So there's a difference between Black Lives Matter and Black Lives Matter, the organization. Because the concept of Black Lives Matter, I think 100% right.
Yeah.
Is right. And especially at the moment, that's what we need to focus on. And I think that I'm 1000% supportive of that. But the BLM movement in the United States is a problematic movement in terms of its own stuff. Not
so someone's actually said that the problem that they have, it was a black person, with the Black Lives Matter movement, is that there's no clear direction. So I think because there's no clear direction or a specific figure.
It's true. It's 100% right. So you don't know what the ideology is. So that means it's hijacked by the Palestinian type of causes, and it's hijacked by all sorts of other, what they call intersectionality. And that is a problem. And again, that's the noise.